9:30 on a Monday morning, an opportunity for me to welcome in City Manager Mike Bailey and staff. Good morning.
Good morning, Charlie.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood for daylight savings time.
I hate daylight savings time, Charlie. I think it's fine once
I believe technically there is no S. I think it's daylight saving time.
Daylight saving time.
Yeah.
See, now I hate it even more.
Yeah.
doesn't even sound right now.
No, it doesn't.
I'm fine with daylight saving time once it's here. It's this transition that it's a little rough on me. So
okay.
I'm a little sleepy.
I can understand that.
So you're going to have to carry the show, Charlie.
Well,
that's kind of like normal. So all is as it should be, right?
I'm not even going to go there. the water utility director may yell at me or something. I don't know.
Nah, he'll reserve that for me once we get out of the car.
No, okay. Typically, we do open up with some news-related announcements having to do with city business, like those water bills that probably everybody has gotten by now.
That's right. Well, we've got a few things going on. One of the things that I promised Chief Rolls I would talk about at every opportunity is the Citizens Police Academy.
Yes.
And this is something that we have done in the past. I don't know that it was exactly in the form that these guys are going to do now.
I graduated from the one in 2001.
And there you go. Yeah. Well, you would actually probably have a better frame for comparison than I would. But it's something that the chief is very excited about starting back up. This is a really cool program that gives the community at large an opportunity to see what it's like to be a police officer. It's my wife in particular is a great watcher of live PD. And so you see those things, and you see it happen, or you see a little clip of a video.
I saw over the weekend that Tulsa Police Department is going to be joining one of those type of shows,
okay.
And I forget which one it is, so I'll just say one of those.
Well, in fact, they used to be on the, I think it was Live PD. They were actually on there, and then they, for some reason, they removed themselves from it, so she'll be glad to hear that they're coming back. She always enjoyed watching that, but there's a definite interest in police work right now with all of the video shows and the live PD.
It's no different than all the police scanners that were out there in
the
70s and 80s. People wanted to hear what was going on.
That's right. They want to know. And this gives people an opportunity to look into this and see firsthand what it is. And
there was also smoking in the bandit, but that's another story entirely.
that might have given the opposite view of the police when it came to smoking the bandit. So this will be an 11-week program. The first class will kick off in August 20th, and it'll conclude on October 29th. And all of the classes will be 6 to 9 p.m. On Tuesdays. And we're trying to host it at the Bartlesville Police Department. They can host about 20. It's a distinct possibility that the class size will have to increase. They had this application period open for about a week and had 18 applications. And they'd only intended to accept 20, so they may expand the class. They're not really sure; just kind of waiting to see what the how many applications they get. But it's again great program. It's a great opportunity for our citizens to see what it's like to be a police officer. They are hoping to have even like a simulator so that people can be put in the real situations that the officers are. So a lot of the training that a police officer goes through, it's not just learning to fire a gun. There's also learning when to deploy force. That's right, or not. There are simulators that allow you to do that, and you have an officer who actually operates the simulator, and you interact with it. So the officers are expected to use voice commands and do the things that they're trained to do. And if they're successful, then the simulator goes down one path. If they're not successful, then it could escalate, and then the officer will have to determine. So anyway, it really is exciting. There's a lot of topics that they'll cover. They talk about the canine program. They'll cover the Miranda warning, how and why it's administered. They'll cover, you know, driving under the influence.
If you haven't played with those DUI goggles that simulate being under the influence, those are worthwhile.
Very effective tool for showing you what it's like, huh? But anyway, we hope that anybody who is interested will sign up for this. There is a form that you need to fill out and submit, and it can be found on the city's website at cityofbartlesville.org. Or you can call the police department or go visit them at the police department And then once you have those, you'll email that to Special Assistant to the Chief, which is Rick Silver. He will be happy to take your application. And again, I know they're very excited for this program, and I think it's a great way to show citizens.
I think his rank was captain when I took the police academy. But
I think you are correct. He actually, was he a captain? I think he was a lieutenant when he left the Barnesville Police Department. I believe he was a lieutenant. Yeah. And before he became sheriff, and now he's back home where he started at the Barnesville Police Department. We're certainly glad to have him. So, well, Charlie, I got a couple of people here with me. We'll start with Terry Lauritsen. Terry is the director of Water and Wastewater Utilities, and he has, due to all of the GO bonds that we issued, we've issued in the last 12, or in about a 12-month period, we issued about $13 million worth of GO bonds. With that going on, we had a backlog of projects that we wanted to get done timely, so Terry has also stepped back across from his office out at operations and has spent some time down at City Hall helping in his former role as the city engineer to help us to get some of these projects done.
It's appropriate that the water utility director should be able to clear a backlog.
Clear a backlog, that's right. In more ways than one, right,
Charlie?
That's
an ironic statement, yes.
So, good morning, Terry.
Good morning.
Terry has actually quite a few things going on, but I think that we'll talk about the Tower Center project first and some of the things that Terry has going on that will lead up to that. And why don't we give everybody an update on where that project is right now?
Well, sure. We actually have started construction on improvements that aren't associated with the Tower Center, but they're necessary to facilitate the construction of the Tower Center. So we had a project that was approved in the sales tax election, I think in 2013, 2014, to improve the stormwater system downtown, which is from Adams Boulevard there at the community center, continuing north all the way up to the river. So we have a system that really carries a lot of stormwater from the residential area to the south and migrates through downtown and discharges there at the Caney River. So we have started the improvements in that area last week. We started the sanitary sewer that has to be relocated, and then probably in early April we'll start on the stormwater piece through that section to facilitate the Tower Center project that will commence kind of right in the middle of when we're doing those projects as well. So that's the construction that you see down there now is for those improvements. We do have a couple of things that are happening. The plans are being finalized for the construction of the Tower Center, and that should be complete here in the next week or so. And then at the council meeting next Monday, which I think we're having a special council meeting on March the 18th.
We will, yep.
We're going to do some legal things that we need to do to close rights away and to dedicate property and a bid for stormwater improvements to facilitate the stormwater piece of that project. So we'll have quite a few things that are occurring here very shortly as far as the planning and some of the back office type work to get that moving. And then we're looking to have a contract for potentially Jones Plan on the construction management of it by April 1st. And then we're on the ground running for the improvements there at the Tower Center. But I think they do have a design review committee meeting. So council created a design review committee that would basically determine what the space would look like. And so they're going to have a meeting, I believe, this Wednesday at noon to kind of go over where that plan is at in its current state. And we should have some budget numbers from Jones Plan to help them understand the cost of some of these improvements. And hopefully everything lines up where the improvements and the costs will.
It's always the hope.
Will be in line. So that's kind of what we're looking at here in the next couple weeks. And as we progress, we'll certainly see more activity down there.
And the budget for that, it was $1.75 million that we had from a GO bond.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about some of the amenities as far as the things that will be included in the park. And granted, it's not a final design. That still has to be, as you mentioned, on Wednesday. And the public is welcome to attend that.
Yep.
If you're interested in the design of this space, then on Wednesday in City Hall in the first floor, At noon, there will actually be a meeting to review this, the proposed final design. They will then make a recommendation to council, and ultimately council will determine what the final design is. But so if you're interested, please join us Wednesday at noon. But so just so people have some idea, what kind of amenities and features are we talking about included in this?
Well, the big component will be a stage, a covered stage. Will have a bathroom and then a storage space. But they're really creating several different zones, so they're going to have a lot of landscaping that's in conjunction with it, an open green space that will be on the western edge of it. The stage facility will be somewhat in the central piece of it, and then on the eastern edge where kind of the fountain is now, they'll have another fairly heavy landscaped area, and they're kind of creating different zones for potentially different types of activities. And enjoyment of this open space. So it's a really neat design, a lot of amenities from a landscape perspective, creating some different zones and different looks that that really kind of commingle the Price Tower, the community center, a nod to the Osage Hills and some of that history with the sandstone. So a lot of different looks and certainly different uses within the space. And overall, I think it's going to be a wonderful amenity to that downtown area through there. But it's going to look completely different than it does now. So
boy, it will.
Part of the project will remove all of the pavement, the raised planter beds that currently exist between the Price Tower and the community center, and really rising all that to create this open look and landscape area. So it's really going to be a neat facility, and they do have some wonderful kind of renderings of what that space would look like, and they'll show those to the design review committee this Wednesday. So if you have some interest in the project, this would be a good meeting to attend so you could kind of see what the intent for the look, and I'm sure they're going to talk more specifics about colors and different amenities and kind of the overall aesthetics of it to kind of make that all homogeneous with both these iconic structures with the Price Tower and the community center and kind of commingling all that together.
And the fountain is staying.
The fountain will stay, yep.
It's going to be redone. There will be some modifications to it, but it is staying.
Yeah, it will be refreshened, and the water feature will remain, and the kind of the waterfall component of that will remain, but it will be modified a bit to make it a little bit more maintenance-free and a little bit more robust as far as its longevity. And so they're going to add some lights, and so a lot of it's going to be combination of landscaping and lighting and different amenities to make it a worthwhile adventure and kind of a nice little green space in the heart of downtown.
And it really is an exciting project, and I know that it is probably the most visible project that we have going on, and it is very, very important to our city, but there's also a lot of other things going on that are far more subtle and probably won't be noticed by the public, but they're just as critical to the future of our city. You in particular, and I've been involved to some degree, have been working on long-term water supply. And of course, the topic of long-term water supply predates yours and my involvement in this by about a decade. This is something that since the drought that turned Hula from a lake into just a little stream bed back in what year was that?
It was in 2001.
2001. That triggered a serious study of long-term water supply in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. And frankly, in the last, 17 years, we felt like we've made very little progress, probably until the last couple of months. And we've had a couple of projects that have moved significantly along. And at our council meeting, we actually took some action on one of those. Why don't you tell people about the wastewater reuse project that we've got going on?
Yeah, that's really been an exciting possibility for us. But really in 2012, the water supply game, at least in Oklahoma, changed in that the Oklahoma legislature approved what they call the Water for 2060 law. And that law really directed the Department of Environmental Quality, who is the enforcement and regulatory agency over water supply and wastewater treatment, tasked them to develop regulations for water reuse and to encourage water reuse. So that was really the catalyst for a lot of the things that are happening for us today. But what happened, or the way that our system lays out, is that we have a wastewater plant that's on the north side of Tuxedo, just at the north end of Chickasaw. But that's roughly a quarter mile from the raw water intake there at Johnstone Park. So the raw water intake, so if you go to Kitty Park, there's a blonde brick building that sits right there on the riverbank. But that was the original water supply for Bartlesville back in the 30s and 40s.
The Bartlesville Water Company, I believe.
The Bartlesville Water Company, and that facility and that pump station is still in use today. So we started looking again at our wastewater treatment and the potential for water reuse, and just as luck would have it, is that it's a feasible item for us to pump the treated wastewater into the river upstream of our intake structure, roughly about 5-6 miles. And then let the water mingle with the existing river water and then retake that or reuse that and retreat it and use it for drinkable or potable applications. So while I say that in 30 seconds, the process to get there was fairly detailed and very technical, in the sense that we've hired consultants to do studies and to work with the state to determine what type of treatment or how the treatment needed to be on the wastewater. How much could we divert upstream within the Caney River, and all the details that are associated with those tasks. And so we just concluded that study and presented the results to council last Monday. And basically what it boiled down to is it was feasible at our current treatment level. We can divert up to 4 million gallons a day up north, roughly about 7 miles, with discharge being roughly at County Road 1500 in the Caney River. And then we let the water mingle and blend with the Caney River, and then obviously reuse it and retreat it and use it for potential drinking situations. So the system is really being set up to use as a fail-safe. So if water supply runs low or we have an extended drought like we did in 2001, then we can reuse that treated wastewater as a very reliable source of water. And even with the droughts in 2001, and the most recent one was in 2012, 2013, the flows through the wastewater plant are very stable. So they're not impacted by drought and by environmental considerations. So it gives us a very redundant source of water in case we do run into problems with drought and other considerations with our area lakes, so Hula Lake or Hudson Lake.
And about 4 million gallons a day is what we'll be permitted to actually discharge upstream and reuse. And on average, what is our what's our water use in Bartlesville?
In the wintertime, we hover right around 5 million gallons a day. And then in the summer, we can go up to 12 million gallons a day. So during the wintertime, it could potentially be the sole source of water for us and of through
course,
wastewater.
Of course, the main difference between winter and summer is irrigation.
Yep.
In reality, the wastewater system, wastewater reuse, could supply almost all of the water that's needed for our ordinary use, in other words, for our potable uses, while during a drought we might have to restrict watering, which we would do anyway. Technically, this would be able to supply a majority of the water that we needed almost indefinitely.
It could. It certainly could. And one of the other items that we did look at and we presented to council last Monday was compounds for emerging concerns. So these are all the pharmaceuticals, pesticides, industrial-type compounds that are not currently regulated by the EPA. But we wanted to get a benchmark for where we're at, not only with the river and with a potential reuse scenario, but also with Hudson Lake, just to see what kind of a benchmark for us on where we're at and what the level of concentration of those chemicals are. And so we had Dr. Kyle Murray, who's with he's a hydrogeologist for the Oklahoma Geological Society, but he works with the University of Oklahoma as well. And he's come up and he's sampled the water. We have run seasonal tests on that. And each test, roughly, cost us about $17,000 a shot. So it's a fairly expensive, very detailed type of test that they do. But they sample and test for basically 100 compounds at the very trace level. So that's the part per trillion. So that's less than a teaspoon worth of concentration within an Olympic-sized pool.
There you go.
So it's very, very, very trace type of constituent. But what they found to date so far was that everything is pretty consistent with what they've seen elsewhere in the state. None of our compounds, even at the discharge at the wastewater treatment plant, would exceed the limit that's imposed. There's three of the compounds that do have a limit that's established by the EPA. And even at the wastewater discharge, the concentration of those compounds does not exceed that limit by the dictated by the EPA. So we do have one more sampling event and a round of tests that we want to conduct. And then we'll have Dr. Murray come back up and give a final presentation to council on those constituents. And we're also looking at the treatment plant and some pretreatment on the potable side or the drinking water side to help further mitigate potential impacts to all these trace compounds. So a lot of detailed information. And I think we're going to try to get the presentation on the web so that people can kind of see that and mull through all those 99 compounds and the various concentrations that we found with it. But a really elaborate study and a good study for us to understand what's in the water and to help kind of plan for improvements in the future.
It really was very interesting,
despite what I might have said at the time.
It really was quite interesting. But the studies essentially were, there was really two of them that were presented to council that night, and one of them dealt with the more traditional view of wastewater, and it was for permitting through ODEQ. Yep. And that one's mandated. We have to do that kind of study. Just so everybody understands, I believe it's compounds of emerging concern, and the study that we did on that, that's not mandatory for what we're doing. That's something that we elected to do to ensure the safety of this wastewater reuse.
That's correct.
So this is that was over and above what's required, but it is something that you foresee that at some point in the future that many of those compounds may be that they may have a limit on them, and we may have to treat for them if they exceed those limits. So certainly something that we have to be aware of as we go into this. I know that I think in the state there's maybe one other wastewater reuse project. Is that Norman and Lake Thunderbird?
Right? Norman has been looking at a reuse scenario. Lawton was looking at one, but that hasn't really progressed much. So Norman's really the only active community that's looking in
other than
water
us.
Reuse.
And there's just a little bit different. So if anybody happens to be out reading and they see that some of the things in the Norman, theirs is different in that it's being discharged into the lake. So it's, as I think you described it, as the bowl effect. So a lot of the compounds of emerging concern that they're worried about could actually accumulate over time in their lake. So they're going
to... Is that due to siltation and other, where it just, once it gets on the bottom of the bowl, it's on the bottom of the bowl?
Yeah, it does. It does have some degradation, but those chemicals typically have a much slower degradation than you would typically see from organic type of runoff. So it, you're exactly right. The bowl effect is, you know, how many times can you cycle through that where the compounds build up, and then it does become a concern. So
that's right.
Ours is different in the sense that we aren't discharging to a lake; we're discharging to the river. And so it will just flow by us, and it doesn't have that compounding effect where a lake type of scenario would. So it's really an ideal setup for us on a reuse scenario and somewhat fortunate. I know that when we were looking at the wastewater treatment plant 10 years ago, and because we knew we were going to have to make some improvements and modifications to that, we are somewhat scoffing at our founding fathers for the location of that plant because we have to pump roughly 80% of our flows to that. So it's not an ideal location
from a
wastewater planning perspective, but it's a wonderful location for a water reuse scenario. Yeah. And maybe they were much wiser than we give them credit for.
much wiser than we are, perhaps. So, and that does bring up a good point. We purchased some land years ago. So we actually looked at our wastewater plant, what was that, 10 years ago, something of that nature?
Yeah.
And during that period of time, it was determined that our best avenue to correct some of the issues we have with wastewater treatment was to build a secondary treatment plant south of town. And that was the plan up until very recently. And our plan changed primarily because of wastewater reuse, where we did not want to divert flows to the south. We wanted to keep them where they are because this becomes part of our water supply. So it's no longer just purely about wastewater. The decisions that we're making now are linking wastewater and water as a water supply together.
Yeah, it's and really until 5-6 years ago, those tracks, wastewater and water, they were separate. You never looked at combining those. And now the game has changed, and we're looking at that in a more holistic approach on wastewater and water supply management. And so it's really a wonderful opportunity for us to really lock in and secure some long-term water supply for us. We're still looking at other sources, but Gila Lake and Copan Lake, and so those will continue to progress, but it gives us a kind of a real viable option for a redundant source of water to help buy us more time to pursue other water from either Copan Lake or Gila Lake.
I think you said it gave us another 25 years.
At least 25 years, maybe up to 50, depending on water consumption.
So that is great news for our community. There's certainly nothing more critical than ensuring water supply in a community. So, and with that, we're going to switch from talking wastewater and water and parks to my favorite topic. We're going to talk money. So got Jason Muniger here with us. He is the finance director, city clerk, and a couple other things. But those are the two big things that'll eat up your time right now. But Jason, we got sales tax over the weekend.
We did. We got our collections in from the state over the weekend. Kind of keeping up the same trend we've had most of the year, all positive.
It's been a good year so far.
It really has.
Not explosive, but we have certainly been above last
consistently
year.
Consistently above the prior year.
Consistently above. So where are we at this point in the fiscal year compared to last year?
Currently, we're sitting roughly with our TIF tax reserve considered into this. We are sitting roughly $300,000 above budget anticipation.
And the of course, the TIF that you're talking about is used as an incentive to construct
Silver Lake Village. Yes, sir.
Which is our new shopping center, and as part of that, there was a certain amount of the sales tax over time has to be set aside as an emergency in case for the debt.
Yes, sir. Initially, year one was 50% of all sales tax that the city received. We held over in a reserve fund as those roll out every 12 months. They dropped another tier. So we're currently looking at most of the storefronts there at a 30% reserve that we're holding on those. And then it falls down to a 10, I believe, after another year. So really being in year two of that kind of helps our budgeted to actual compared to last year look
it
better.
It has. And it was interesting because last year, of course, we put in sales tax and we look at it from a perspective of total whole dollars without those removed. And then we removed the TIF. And so last year, since it was the first year we'd had it, whenever we removed the amounts for the TIF, those numbers were always worse. So if we were up 1% before we removed the TIF, then once we removed the TIF, then we'd be even.
Yes,
this year, because we've gone from reserving 50% to 30%, once we calculate in the TIF, it's actually a bit of an improvement.
Positive for us,
because we're comparing year over year typically when we're
correct.
Looking at these. So what's percent growth for the fiscal year over last fiscal year?
We're looking at a little over 2.5%.
So about 2.5% up. That's certainly sustainable. We would be hopeful that we could keep that going into the future.
I would take that year over year.
We would definitely take that. I believe the last 2 years we've had was last year almost even?
Last year was a little, it was about 0.75% over.
And then I think the prior 2 years we'd actually had negative growth in sales tax. So
roughly average about -2% over the two years.
We will definitely take the small growth over the.
Take it steady.
Over the negative, so. All right. Well, I appreciate it, Jason and Charlie. That's about all we have for today, but wanted to thank you for hosting us and thank everybody for listening.
Well, since you are on the topic of the chief and we have about a minute, he is offering rides this St. Patrick's Day.
He is. It's not a gotcha
ride.
It really isn't. He didn't have a whole lot of takers on New Year's, but he's hoping that word has spread and that people will be interested in it. And he is very serious. If you need a ride on St. Patrick's Day, and he is more than willing to take people home or wherever you need to go. So definitely do not drink and drive. You have other options.
Well, I think, Mike, that you had maybe potentially volunteered to ride shotgun with the chief.
I think somebody had maybe potentially volunteered me to do that, Terry Lawrence, but I'm not sure I ever volunteered. That's way past my bedtime, Charlie. This is way past my bedtime.
Well, anyway, if somebody feels the need, it's a free, no questions asked ride
Absolutely.
To your destination within the city of Bartlesville.
Absolutely. And Saturday. And the chief, absolutely, he had a ball with it last time. As I say, he didn't have very many takers, but he had a good time. And the ones that they did, I think even at the end of the night, he got a big hug from one of the guys that he took home. So feel free to get a ride from the chief and give him a hug. Tell him I said you could do it.
That's City Matters.
American Heritage Bank, now serving the Osage region of Bartlesville, Pawhuska, and Barnstall.
This is KWON Bartlesville and 93.3 FM K227 CQ Bartlesville.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Both China and Indonesia have